Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest Tap Talks HR podcast. Today, I am talking to Tap Talks HR podcast regular Andy Roberts about entrepreneurship and specifically the entrepreneur HR leader. Hi, Andy, and welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Anthony. Thank you for having me back.
No worries at all. It's good to see you again on the Tap Talks HR podcast. So, HR entrepreneurship. So, why should HR practitioners be more entrepreneurial?
I think there's several reasons. I think all the way through my career, you know, being involved as a HR partner in a family business and through consulting and coaching, I've seen often many times HR practitioners, for whatever reason, not necessarily have a voice at the top table. And I think entrepreneurship or being entrepreneurial is a way to get that voice at the top table. So that really helps if they can be driving or at least aligning with the strategic objectives of organizations. I also think if HR practitioners in general were more entrepreneurial, they would be more innovative in how they manage talent across the whole pipeline. And of course, if you're entrepreneurial, you're more used to being effective in change. And so being more adaptable, more problem solving, and all of that combined, I think, if HR practitioners were more entrepreneurial, they would be having more engagement from their senior stakeholders, but also from their employees or partners that they support across the business. And so I think entrepreneurialism is a way of saying, how can they create more value, be more present at the top table, and have a bigger impact, not just on the HR part of the organization, but broadly across the business or organization in general.
So basically what we're saying here is actually if you look at an exco or a set of leaders of an organization, they have a tendency of being more entrepreneurial than probably the HR leader is when they arrive. And do you think there's a particular reason why HR might not be as entrepreneurial as the rest of the board?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's several reasons. I think, and clearly it's going to depend on the organization. I think one element of it is the skill set and the training and the development that HR practitioners generally get. So their degree or master's is all about managing the talent pipeline and the elements of that, but not necessarily about innovation so much, not necessarily about understanding and driving business, not necessarily about strategy. So some of those core things that you'd pick up on maybe on an MBA program or an executive education program are not necessarily there from the HR learning process. I think secondly, many organizations, unfortunately, have kind of this default perspective of what does HR do? And they might not necessarily see them as having an equal place at the table. And then I think a third element is possibly how the HR practitioners see themselves. And I always kind of go back to this idea of in any internal relationship, are you the driver? Are you the partner? Or are you the follower? And I think a lot of HR practitioners are in that I'm an order taker, not an order creator perspective. So they're not driving the things forward. They're basically taking requests and making them happen. So they're enablers of strategy, not necessarily drivers of strategy and innovation.
And that's interesting, isn't it? Because if you think about how David Ulrich defined HR about 20 odd years ago, there was that element of the administrative expert, and that doesn't really fit in with being entrepreneurial, does it? And maybe because there are such high workloads in the world of HR and we're never finished with things like policy and procedure and everything, maybe we don't get our heads above the parapet enough to actually spend the time there.
Absolutely. I think, you know, particularly now, post-pandemic, a lot of HR people organizations are struggling to have the right amount of people to support even the basics of keeping the businesses organizations running. And therefore, people are being subsumed into what I would call lower value tasks. I mean, hopefully, things like generative AI can help with a lot of that. But fundamentally, it's about making choices. How and where do we spend our time? What is our role and purpose as a HR community in our organization? Are we there to accelerate the transformation, the execution of strategies, or are we there in a supportive background role and just a core function to make other things happen. And that's a choice point. That's a choice point of the senior HR leaders, but also the next layer down, I believe. And if they truly believe that they can make a difference, then they have to step up and be more entrepreneurial.
Okay, so I know at TAPT we get calls more and more recently actually about entrepreneurialism and senior leadership, and actually there's a lot of stuff out there. So I'm really keen to get your view about what research there is in terms of the psychology required for an HR leader to become more entrepreneurial.
It's a great point. I haven't found so much specifically about HR, but if we take the research around entrepreneurialism in general in business and enterprises, I actually think that really applies. And so the favorite piece of research I found actually comes from Spain, and it was from the Spanish Journal of Psychology. And the Spanish government, through their Department of Industry and Commerce, funded a whole set of research around how can we make people more entrepreneurial, or at least assess if people are entrepreneurial. And that research around, you know, what are the characteristics of entrepreneurs, I think perfectly comes across and translates over to the HR world. So I think entrepreneurialism as a whole has this kind of core set of things that you need from a behavior personality perspective. And I think they're still really, really relevant to the HR community.
And that's interesting, isn't it? Because, there was me asking, what research was there about HR leadership? But actually, HR is not special, is it? And I think sometimes we see, if you look at an exco, you have all the different functions themselves, and then it's like HR is we look at it and as a specialist kind of area. But actually, these days, you should be able to transfer positions, because actually the leadership part is actually probably the more specialism by the time you get to a HR leader than actually the HR stuff itself. Being able to lead and direct a team is probably a more key to the role. So you talked about these characteristics. Could you give us a few examples of them?
Sure. I mean, the research fundamentally looks at 8 characteristics of what does an entrepreneurial personality look like. And again, I think you're right. These 8 areas can translate across to pretty much any role in the senior function or at any level, really. I've kind of clustered them into 3 areas. The first area is around kind of self-belief. And that's, first of all, self-efficacy, you know, the belief that you're able to have an impact and do things for ourselves. Connected to that is a second one, which is around believing in our own internal locus of control. That kind of goes back to that Stephen Covey idea of focusing on what I can control and focusing on what I can influence on, and recognizing that we can have control in what we do. So that's the kind of first area, the self-belief piece. The second piece is all around what I would call drive. And that starts off with an achievement orientation. So people who have a passion for making a difference and a motivation to make a difference. And that's supported really by a really strong ability to be autonomous. So if you've got kind of this autonomy piece and drive piece, you can be way more effective in what you do. And then I think from that as well, if we look at the third area, that's really around experimentation. So risk-taking. People who are willing to take risks. And clearly you need off the back of that things like psychological safety, but also the capacity to deal with stress. And so I think if you pull that in as well, the ability to deal with stress, you get a real strong entrepreneurial mindset. And I think as I look at all of these, the one that probably makes the biggest difference is optimism, being positive about ourselves, positive about our futures. And so, you know, self-efficacy, autonomy, innovativeness, looking to do new things, realizing we're in control, driving to make an achievement, dealing with stress, taking risks, but it all kind of supported by optimism. So quite a few areas, but I kind of bucket them into those areas of self-belief, drive, and experimentation.
And that's really interesting, isn't it? Because as you were saying that, I was thinking, stepping back, what do I think of as an entrepreneur? And an entrepreneur is someone who gets the idea and with people around them creates value from that. And could do that. You think of entrepreneurs, they're very much self-starters, aren't they? And then some of the things you started saying about autonomy, et cetera, made me think of Daniel Pink and his work around intrinsic motivation, around autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And actually, you think of an entrepreneur, they have that autonomy to do what they need to do, and they are very driven by the purpose. You think of anyone from Elon Musk all the way down to someone who's in a startup in a back street of a city around Europe or the world, kind of starting up their business. They have that sense of, I know where I'm going, I'm in control of my life. And actually the mastery bit is actually these characteristics you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's entrepreneurialism, or intrapreneurialism, I think you could also call it internally, is that self-starting attitude. I really like that connection with Daniel Pink's work, you know, the drive, mastery, and purpose piece. If we've got a passion to make a difference, we should make it flourish. And that's what I think is the underlying bedrock of this, and recognizing it might be tough. Great. Have a go anyway.
And I think you talked about experimentation as well, and risk-taking, which doesn't necessarily go down that well with what the function of HR traditionally has done. I mean, the concept of actually a new piece of tech, we build it, we get it ready to go, and we roll it all out in a big ta-da and everything. But actually, if you think about modern ways of actually things like tech, etc., it's experimentation, it's piloting, it's small steps, it's failing fast. And you're starting to see that in the world of HR. I think of Natalie Bank and her work around agile HR and that idea of agile coming in. And do you think that's connected with a movement towards entrepreneurialism?
Oh, I definitely think so. I'm kind of listening into you there. One thing that struck me was it's actually the agile piece is often around the customer and what does the customer need. And the HR community are almost like piggy in the middle sometimes. They've got the exco or the board that they have to support, but then they've got the employees or partners of the organization, and it's listening to both of those. I mean, I can remember a year or so ago, you shared a story with me about an organization who, you know, invested a massive amount of money in a HR onboarding app. Only to find out that actually the people they were onboarding didn't really want it. And what they wanted was a glossy cover magazine type of thing. And listening and then pivoting to what the people needed was a critical element of that. So that's entrepreneurialism. It's like trying something out, recognizing we've got a sunk cost, listening and pivoting to something else that's more useful and more valuable. And entrepreneurs, you know, there's very few that have been successful on their first attempt. Most of them are successful 6, 7, 8, 9 times later. There's a quote, I think, from James Dyson. It's like, you know, 235 times later, I actually came up with the design for the first Dyson machine. You've got to keep on going. And that's a critical element of all of this kind of core competencies of an entrepreneur. It's that keep going when times are tough and keep figuring it out. You won't find the perfect solution first time. And that really connects with the agile world in my mind.
I like that. It's really is starting to think about employee listening, but then what do you do with it? Because actually, take a punt. If your employees are saying we want this or this is missing, don't rely on going back to best practice to do your HR plan. Actually, go and service that immediate need, because that's what entrepreneurs do. They find a gap in the market and what people want. Or maybe even what they don't know that they want yet, and then they put something there for it. So that's really interesting, which kind of brings me on to a question I wanted to ask you. It's just, what can HR practitioners do in this area to help themselves? So that's a bit about the research and the characteristics and everything, but what can HR practitioners actually do to move themselves into this area?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. As always, change and transformation starts with ourselves. And so it starts at a personal level, recognize, kind of looking at those competencies and saying, you know, do I have those, and adapting ourselves. But then I think from a community perspective, there's a few things that they should be considering. First of all, they need to get out of the swim lane of HR and jump over to the other swim lanes of the other parts of the organization. I'm a big believer, you know, having spent a lot of time in executive education, that everybody should understand how businesses operate, the business model, the finances. And I know for many HR practitioners, understanding all of that stuff might be a bit concerning or a bit worrying. But if you want to have that voice at the table to get the resources to be entrepreneurial, you've got to understand it and speak the language, and the language is finance. So jump out the swim lane, be comfortable swimming in the other lanes of the business. I think also recognize, you know, you mentioned it already, there are constraints. There's constraints of time, there's constraints of budget, but they're not excuses. They really need to embrace the constraints and jump out of those constraints. So don't stay in your swim lane. You know, maybe embrace those constraints and say, how can we do this with the resources we've got? You know, Elon Musk, you mentioned already, he's trying to get people to Mars. He's buying pieces off eBay to build his rockets, or at least to help him design his rockets. He's really thinking creatively about how to do things. I think also the HR community shouldn't wait for it. They should drive their ideas, get beyond the planning cycle. So what we are now, the end of February, and we're recording this, you know, most cycles are probably done for many organizations, but kind of get out of the cycle and don't wait for change. Drive the entrepreneurial things that you want to happen and find ways of finding the money. You know, in my own experience of working with executives across a range of industries, I had this conversation so many times, and they always say, if someone's got a great business idea that will really make a difference to our business, we'll find the money, even if we've gone through the budgeting cycle. So I think don't wait for the change, drive it, get the support you need. And that goes into change management and stakeholder management and so forth. But I think those would be three of the fundamental things. So don't stay in the HR bubble, break out of it. Recognize that you've got constraints, but embrace them and think how you can break out of the constraints and drive the change. Ask for what you need. Challenge upwards would be three critical things, I think.
And that's so interesting. I mean, I'm sitting here, as you can see, I'm taking copious notes as we're recording this podcast. And I love your analogy of getting out the swim lane of HR. And I think sometimes I see up and coming HR experts coming through the ranks of an organization, and my feedback is, get out, just know your business rather than know your HR, because you can always find out how something works, a certain law or the process or the policy, etc., because that's just stuff. But it's actually being able to interact and influence and connect with the business and understand actually what leverage is and actually how to create value and how to create that business plan, rather than seeing what budget you've got and then seeing what to do with it. I think that's such a key point there. And it makes me think about, and you've mentioned it already, the whole hot topic of generative AI. And we're recording this, as you said, February 2024. So if you're listening to this in about 5 years' time and the robots have taken over, we didn't know that at this moment in time. But actually, the concept of digital workers, and recently at the World of Learning conference, they were talking that actually by next year, you'll have opinion-orientated digital workers on Teams calls, on Zoom calls with you. And actually, how are we going to deal with that? And I think with that comes, actually, there is going to be a shift of what is work and who does the work, or what does the work, and actually who is owning the digital worker at the moment. And to me, that's a great kind of entrepreneurial area for HR professionals and leaders to jump into. Go and grab it and own it and really drive it.
Absolutely. I don't know any organization, you know, we're working with right now that has an excess of talent coming into their business and has no struggles with retaining that talent. And I think the same old is a risk. It's a risk to retaining and it's a risk to attracting. Organizations get people in when they've got purpose, when they've got a product or a service, or make a difference to community or to society. And HR practitioners can have a huge impact on shaping the not just the people agenda, but the business agenda. And if anything, I would say actually the HR communities generally are probably in one of the best locations within an organization to do this, because they're listening so much to so many areas. Now, when we talk about sense making is going and looking out beyond the organization, but the HR community, the internal sense makers, what are people talking about? What do people need? And how can we meet those needs? And what are they noticing about our customers and our competitors? And actually, they've got their ear to the ground of the organization probably more than anybody. And then they need to, if they're not already, punch up out their lane or out their bubble, the exco to the board to make the difference with those things that they're learning and gleaning.
Yeah, and I really think HR, human resources, it's a chance for us to be so entrepreneurial and just be worker resources, and then we can pull in both factors, and we can find it, because your second point was actually no budget is not an excuse, but actually it's a great opportunity to say, actually, if we automate this and we change that, actually we release so much of salary, which for most organizations is the biggest cost of it, and actually we can release that to do this other stuff, which is quite entrepreneurial in its own aspect.
Maybe the question there is, what is the core competency of the HR community? What do we really need them for? You know, if I go back 20 years in my career, the whole thing of, you know, offshoring, outsourcing, nearshoring, it was about getting the non-vital and the non-value adding functions. Maybe this is an opportunity to say, well, hold on, what is HR actually about, and how do we make the difference? And sure, a lot of these things, you know, with generative AI and so on in the future, you can simplify or streamline so that these people have got more time to do the stuff that's really having an impact on the employees or partners and also the broader organization.
Yeah, and that's interesting. And there was a word you used earlier, which raised one of my eyebrows, and I'm going to bring it back, because actually you talked about intrapreneurialism as well as entrepreneurialism. So what do you mean by that? Is that like a broader view of the organization?
I think, classic for me, the entrepreneur is about going to the marketplace with services and products and solutions, a combination of. And I think the intrapreneur is really about doing that internally. So intrapreneur and entrepreneur for me can be used in both ways, but it's really about saying, you know, how can we make a difference internally? And a bit to your point earlier, you can go out and listen and find out what people need, but a lot of the great things that we have in society today came because someone thought, this might be useful, let's see what happens. And you have pull innovation, pulling from what people need, but you have push innovation. People don't know they need this yet until they have it. The iPhone being the classic in the tech space in society. So I think intrapreneurialism is about saying, what do people need from me? What might they need? And let's provide the employees, the partners, and so on with what they need.
I have a classic, sorry, this is a complete tangent, but yesterday I was watching a Time team, and they were digging up some Bronze Age stuff. And there was a type of pottery that started in the Bronze Age. And they had, what they did, they put animal dung in with the clay, because actually it made it more porous, so it didn't crack as much. And the question was, 4,000 years ago, would think about putting animal dung in your pottery? But actually, it was probably some Iron Age, Bronze Age entrepreneur trying something different to see if it worked. And I think that's the thing. It's not new, is it, being an entrepreneur? It's not new thinking creatively and experimenting and seeing what the market needs. A lot of the stuff we use on a day-to-day basis becomes because someone just had this crazy idea and just tried it out and experimented.
Oh, absolutely. If you look at the broader definition of innovation, it's bringing something new to the market, product, service, but new to that community. So pulling an idea from another organization or from another industry and bringing it to your organization, that's innovation. I mean, to be honest, Anthony, I think if I went with some dung to my pottery class now in the 21st century, I think they would look at me just as weirdly as somebody 4,000 years ago, really. So, a lot of things are already out there, and we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Entrepreneurship in HR is not a new topic either, but we've just, I think, lost the edge of it, really.
Yeah, and I remember in one of our senior programs that we did, there was a 2x2 grid, and the axis for entrepreneurialism was the level of stability and the level of autonomy. And you've mentioned autonomy already. Having a large amount of autonomy is great as a characteristic towards being an entrepreneur. But actually, that level of stability, we're in a world with hardly any stability at the moment. So actually, now is ripe of being an entrepreneur in the workplace, in the world of HR, because if you can get that autonomy, and to be honest, most HR leaders, as you rightly say, if you go with the right case, business case, you'll get the ability to go ahead. But actually, in a workplace that's changing so fast, with so much flux that's been going on for 2 or 3 years, and we still don't know where it's going to end up, now's the time to experiment.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, moments of flux are always those moments. This is the time where we can become more adaptive, more entrepreneurial, and rethink what does HR do as a community and how do we want to have that impact across the broader business or organization.
So we're just about out of time. As always, time flies on the Tap Talks HR podcast. But if there was something you wanted the listeners out there, be it HR professionals, HR leaders, be the leaders in a different part of the business, but thinking about entrepreneurialism and entrepreneurship, what would you ask the listeners to either do, reflect on, think about after we finish today?
Great question, Anthony. And I think the thought I had as I was thinking about the podcast today, as always, kind of going off reading, I went to Peter Block's work, and he's for me a mentor, but also a great writer around organizations and communities. And he says, transformation comes from pursuing the profound questions rather than seeking practical answers. And I think you're right. The questions to me are, what are we, the HR community, doing to contribute to this very lack of entrepreneurship? What are some of the barriers that we've created, mental or otherwise, to make it not happen? And therefore, what do we want to create together as a HR community that would make the difference? And then from that, what are people willing to do? Because it can start today. It's not a hard thing. It's not particularly scientific. It's about making changes, being more entrepreneurial, looking for opportunities to make a difference. So thinking about what have we done to contribute to that? What are we actually wanting to do? And then what are we willing to commit to? So it's fundamentally about making a choice. How do I spend my time? Where do I spend my time? That might need some training, some coaching, some mentoring, or it might just be pushing up and spending more time with the people who have got the purses to make the difference to the organization. So I think it starts with asking, who are we and what are we as a HR community, and what do we want, and how do we step out of what we've already created and create the new and the fresh?
Fantastic. I think for me, the bit that really got me going in that last little bit you said there was the bit about what barriers do we put up, and actually, are we subconsciously putting up barriers where actually, if you take a risk, if you do an experiment, then actually, and it doesn't work, what are the consequences? And yeah, I mean, that's almost launching into another different podcast. But to me, that's the bit that maybe as an HR community where we try and de-risk situations, maybe that's a little bit of a tension there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about what could we be doing? What do we do? And what are we willing to do, I guess?
Andy, as always, it's amazing to talk to you and have you on the Tap Talks HR podcast. So thanks for coming along today. And I hope all our listeners are feeling a little bit more entrepreneurial after listening to you.
Fantastic. Thanks for asking me along. It's been a pleasure. And it's been really interesting to get your thoughts on this topic as well. Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. And yeah, that's it for this time. As always, the tapsolutions.com website is a great repository of further information and the podcast library of Tap Talks HR podcasts. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon again with another Tap Talks HR podcast. Bye for now.